Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. It's time for the iOS show where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me as always is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. And I have a nice drink in my hand, so I guess I'm about to be awesomer.
Cool. I have one too. I have a Southern Tier Mocha. It's one that I can't get at home in California, so... That's nice. I really like that. It's the combination of their chocolate and coffee stouts. So
nice.
Yeah, it is nice. Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, but I don't have any of that fancy East Coast beer.
It's more like Central America,
Middle America beer, whatever. I've only got the West Coast stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's good too.
Yeah. We do a lot of IPA out here.
Yeah.
And I prefer stouts and porters, so it's a little dry. I want to get some of the Founders stuff. I would love to be able to get some Founders out here.
If I was driving out, maybe I should have my brother like mule some across the country, because he's going to be driving out.
I'm thinking there's got to be a business in muling craft beer.
I think there is. When I saw my guy at the beer shop here, he said that happens.
But wasn't that the whole premise of Smokey and the Bandit?
Is it?
except it wasn't craft beer; it was Coors from before the time when you could sell it east of the Mississippi.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So they had to smuggle it across.
That is good. That is a good movie. I got to watch that again. I watched a lot of Archer. I watched the last, I think it was the fifth season of Archer. And of course, there's a lot of Burt Reynolds references in there.
Yeah, I haven't seen the most recent season yet because it's still not on Netflix, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
Archer
Vice.
See, now you guys are making me want to watch Cannonball Run.
But yeah, we should talk about iOS stuff.
We should.
Shall we? Siri... The Siri control of HomeKit devices. I think we talked about this. I think it might have been a speculative thing. Maybe it wasn't confirmed, but so it was talked about at CES. I think it was by The Verge. The Verge kind of got this out of some people, some distributors who are working on HomeKit devices. And basically, the HomeKit stuff via iOS will... work just fine on a local network. But if you want to do stuff outside your local network, you need to have an Apple TV, and the Apple TV will work as your hub between your remote iPhone and all those HomeKit devices, which is pretty cool because it essentially turns the Apple TV into a little server to allow all those great things to happen. Where, I mean, the home automation stuff, I think, really shines when you've left the house and you go, oh crap, I don't know if I shut the garage door or not. And you can just tell your phone to shut the garage door.
Or even just ask Siri if it's shut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I like it.
Did I leave the coffee pot on? Hey Siri.
Yeah. Well, that there's one case for the...
Oh, there she is.
The plug-in, the plug-in coffee pot.
I don't understand. Oh, there she is, Siri.
Oh, there she is, Siri.
Hey, Siri, turn off the lights. And we have like three
jerks.
Listeners that are really pissed off right now.
It happens almost every episode now where we do that. When I do it, it's not
intentional.
I totally
forget.
It's not intentional when I do it. It's intentional when Jeff does it, though.
Yeah.
Apple has seeded the fourth beta of iOS 8.2 to developers. I'm still not playing with it at all on my devices since the last time we talked about it. And I think the major thing still is WatchKit, the WatchKit SDK. And the big thing that has been revealed in this beta is that there will be a companion app for the Apple Watch. And so it's been Stephen Troughton Smith, who once again has figured out, I don't know, P-list magic to actually unearth this interface, to give us an insight into what this companion app will actually allow us to do. And so most of this stuff is coming via 9 to 5 Mac. They have a lot of really neat screenshots there. Things like, I mean, monogramming, that's neat, I guess. If you want to do that, you can.
For some people,
you can do a 1-to-4 letter monogram on your watch face. Settings for whether or not to see notifications. It's a little red dot that you will see on the top of your watch face.
Do you think it'll let us put naughty words?
Probably,
since Apple's been kind of prude about some stuff in the past.
Yeah,
naughty words in the monogram.
Yeah,
yeah.
You only get 4 letters, though, right?
That's perfect. All you need.
That's all you need.
It's a perfect number.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm. And you can also tell it to whether or not you want like those stand reminders for those people who, you know, they were mentioning that it'll remind you regularly to stand. If you've been sitting for the first 50 minutes of an hour, you'll receive a reminder to stand.
Really?
Which kind of seems like it's a bit of a depressing thing when you think about it, that one needs a reminder. Hey, you've been sitting for a long time, guy. You should
stand. But a lot of people need a reminder.
It's true. I mean, there is a lot of sitting in my day, especially.
That's a health kit thing.
Yeah, that's a health kit thing. There's also, it'll send you, whether or not you want to get the progress updates, goal completions, this is all health kit stuff, achievements, weekly summary, all that stuff. There are options to tweak your watch face, and I think specifically the home screen. So you can actually lay out your little Apple Watch icons from your phone.
Like change the what apps. Do they call that thing? The app.
The bubbly
cloud.
Thing.
Yeah, what is the thing called? They have a name for it.
Complications?
I know where. Oh, you know the little the groupings of icons. They had
the
special
cluster. I don't know the cloister.
I've been calling it the bubbly thing.
The bubbly thing.
I know you can group them into neighborhoods, right? Isn't that the term they used for?
Yeah, I think
groupings of apps.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought there was a term for the overall.
There might be. I think people know what we were talking about, though.
Now I got to go on Apple's site and check because I feel like a dork
for
not knowing
crazy terms. Yeah, so there are a lot of different things in here, and I think the most visual screenshot here is the ability to rearrange your layout. So that's there. In addition to, I don't know, other things. And it makes sense.
This is the classic point when I get into rumor fatigue around a product, because we're probably pretty close to this thing coming out now, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like we've known about it for so long. And you're kind of the point like, okay, whatever.
I'm getting excited about it.
Yet? I am getting excited about it too, in terms of like, okay, it's almost here. But at the same time, you know, it's like things like, well, yeah, what's that interface called? And like a lot of the minutia of it is just like, okay, can I just have it already?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for me, as I was looking over these screenshots and the things that they were adding there, the things they were actually thinking about interface-wise, what sort of settings they were providing for the people who have this watch, it really made me think about the Apple of old, or the one that I fell in love with that was really attentive to details. And it seems like that's coming through here. So that, I think, is really amping me up for the watch. Whereas, I mean, I think when it was first announced, I'm not sure I was planning on getting it. And now I am considering it. I'm considering getting the first one.
That's kind of a change.
Yeah. So we'll have to see. I'll most certainly go and play with it on day one. If it's allowed. I don't know. Were people able to check out the iPhone 6 the day it came out? Or was it just people buying it and you could buy it and nothing else?
No, you could go in.
Yeah, they got them. They'll have them out on display if you can get in the store.
Right. Well, I think they had a different line for the people.
They usually have
Fondle.
The Fondle line?
Yeah, the Fondle.
No. You're thinking about the TSA.
Yeah. That's the Freedom Search.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get my Freedom Search tomorrow. Almost inevitably, they have me go through the X-ray machine and I tell them I don't want to. Not so much because they care about X-ray. It's more because I just want to be aggravating for them.
Yeah, I don't like going through that thing either.
Let's hope they're listening so Michael gets the special treatment.
My Freedom Search, yeah. Oh. Let's see, what do we have here? Oh, wireless charging. There's this company. What is it called? Y-tricity. Do you guys see this?
It's
really neat because it doesn't require that you, with the stuff that has been on the market so far, like the power mats, and I'm pretty sure the Apple Watch also uses magnetic induction. Is that correct?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, so it has to be lined up properly, and it has to essentially be in direct contact with the device. And so it's not really good for just throwing your phone on the desk and allowing it to charge across the room from whatever device is producing this power for it to pick up on. So the Y-tricity is different because while it still uses magnetic fields, it uses magnetic resonance. And that allows it to go further. It won't interfere with, they say, medical devices, industrial things. It shouldn't really interfere with most everyday objects. And it can go a certain distance. And you can do passive repeaters, so you can have this thing in the corner of a room and maybe halfway across your house, you have a little passive repeater that doesn't need to be plugged in, and it just repeats the electronic signal. They say that it's powerful enough to actually charge an electric car, which is very cool. It can go underneath concrete. So you can imagine you maybe in 10 or 20 years will have a garage that you just pull your car into, and there's this thing built into the concrete, and it just charges your car as soon as you pull in.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and it can work with multiple devices at the same time. It looks really cool. And I believe Intel is working on integrating that in one of their newer chipsets. And, of course, Apple uses those chipsets. So, hey, maybe we'll see that in a future iPhone. But so far, it's kind of limited to things where I think they have prototype cases for things like iPhones, but I think the goal is long term to have it built in, and it seems like one of those technologies that Apple would be more interested in adopting, because it's not just set it on this little mat and it'll work, or have this special case and it'll work. It'll be just one of those things that you, when you're at home near your desk or something like that, it'll just be juicing up your phone, you know, powering your TV, whatever. Did you actually get a chance to see that, Jeff, at CES?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, that would have been really cool to see. Did you get a chance to see the Tesla, the Model X?
No, I didn't have time to go look at any of the cars except for the self-driving Mercedes.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I thought the self-driving stuff was really neat at CES. Well, that was one of the things that I was really excited about.
Yeah, there was some cool stuff. And I love how Mercedes designed their car so that to really embrace the whole driverless thing, because you climb inside and it's like a little room. So no one is sitting behind a steering wheel.
Right.
And it was cool stuff.
Did it have like rotating seats where you could turn around and face people and that sort of thing?
Yes. So you climb in. It's like being in a little room where everyone has their chair and you can carry on a conversation and look at each other.
Nice.
Yeah.
I would love that, especially for long car trips where you're just too tired to drive, to stay awake, you know?
Yeah. You get in and you tell the car where you need to go and it does it.
Yeah. Your own private taxi.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I had a chance this weekend to use Lyft. I've always used Uber. But someone had a Lyft code and they suggested that I try it out. So I got a free Lyft.
I like Lyft.
Yeah. What do you like about it that's different from Uber?
What I liked was that when I knew that my ride was on the way, I had a photograph of the driver and the car. So I could be watching for the car coming down the street and flag him down.
Yeah.
As opposed to Uber, where everyone has the same car pretty much. It's the black car coming.
Really?
Yeah, every time I've been in Uber, it's always been just a nondescript black car.
Interesting.
If you order the black car, sure, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's probably what I've been doing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think UberX is more like Lyft, which is a little bit cheaper too.
Yeah, when I do the UberX, it shows me what the car looks like. I think it's a smaller picture. The one thing that was kind of surprising was that it asked me to tip the driver at the end if I wanted to. With Lyft, mm-hmm. I wasn't accustomed to that.
It's not included, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I like that it's just taken care of by Uber.
I like that I have the option with Lyft, and not because I want to stiff the driver, but because I like the idea of having control over exactly what that tip's going to be.
Sure.
So if they deserve more, well, then they get more.
Yeah. And it was neat that they rated me too.
Did your car have a big pink mustache on the front of it?
No, I was kind of disappointed by that. I thought that was the whole thing. That was the whole shtick, but there was no.
I don't think they have to do that. I think. Yeah. It's...
I haven't had a pink mustache on any of the Lyft rides that I've done.
Yeah. I guess it's encouraged, but not enforced.
I told you my theory about, you know, how everybody got irate about the whole thing. You know, there's the controversy with the Uber. Right?
Right, yeah, with
and the statements made by the thing. By the CEO and no, the whole CEO fallout thing, and so a bunch of people were quitting and moving over to Lyft in protest.
Oh.
And I was just not convinced that, you know, a company that markets based on pink mustache rides is all that much better than whatever Uber.
Right, yeah.
It all depends on what you're looking for in a ride.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, good times. iPhone 6, the iPhone 6S is rumored to include 2 gigabytes of RAM instead of 1. Of course, we've been talking about that a lot. But Force Touch is one that we haven't really talked about, and it's rumored to potentially be in the next iPhone. Of course, the Apple
I don't
Watch,
like that name.
Force Touch?
Yeah.
Does it seem mean?
Yeah, it seems like a non-consensual act.
It makes me feel like I'm a Jedi. I like it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Different emphasis.
Oh, yeah. Adam is putting the emphasis on Force, and I put it on Touch.
Yeah. Yeah, but it would be cool. Well, okay, so the Force Touch technology is in the Apple Watch, and I think it's part of the whole OLED, flexible OLED display that it has.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not it would be compatible with the current display technology in the iPhone as it is, remains to be seen. In addition to that, it also remains to be seen what the utility of that would be in the iPhone, because it's kind of making up for a lack of screen real estate for controls, right, with the Apple Watch. So instead of having a button to pull up the settings or flip to the next album, that sort of thing with the Apple Watch, you force touch and it gives you more options that you can flick through. Whereas the iPhone doesn't really have that problem. And in fact, it's got a lot more space than it used to have, and it never had a force touch on it. So
it would open up more ways of doing touch controls though, right?
You mean gestures?
Can you do a gesture? I don't think you can do a force touch gesture, right?
Well, I think that would be the gesture, I guess. It would be force right. touch, so, and it'll do something extra.
So now you can have tap and hold be one thing, press and hold be another thing, right? Isn't that the whole point behind force touch?
Yeah.
Like it can tell how hard if you just set your finger on the screen versus you're actually pushing in on the screen.
Exactly. But I think that the force touch was a solution to the problem of low screen real estate on the Apple Watch. And if Apple kind of holds true to that whole process of thought in designing their products, and I hope they do, of course, Apple, we hope that they still do that sort of thing, would probably not do that because it would, in fact, mean two different things across two different devices. You know what I mean? Especially with a device that's, the Apple Watch is really a companion to your iPhone to begin with. And if you're doing one thing with a force touch on your iPhone and you're doing another thing on your watch, then it's a really strange experience, I think. So I'm not too sure they're going to do that. Unless they did it as maybe an enhancement to gaming.
Yeah, maybe. All right, so just make you think a little bit. Apple has previously used a feature to do a different thing based on device, and mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the site switch on the iPhone and the iPad. So on one device, it's a mute switch, and on the other, it's rotation lock.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's a different direction. I mean, I can throw that at you. I'm not sure it's a really valid point, but...
Yeah, well, and I'm not exactly sure how valid my point is either, but...
Right, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, my real point is I wouldn't put it past Apple to create a different function for the same thing based on device.
Sure.
I just hope they don't.
Yeah, me too. Let's see what else we have here. Oh, speaking of gaming, Apple filed a patent, or they were granted a patent, for a home button that transforms into a gaming joystick. So the idea, and that's pretty cool. So the idea is you press down into it, and it sort of pops up a little bit, sort of like,
That's kind of cool.
PlayStation controllers and that sort of thing. So you get a
right. Yeah, they stick up a little bit. They're like a little nub that you put your finger on and you kind of roll it around. What do they call those things? The analog stick.
Analog stick. Yep.
So it'd function sort of like a joystick.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think that would be an exceptional improvement because that. I mean, if they had two, that would really make the experience great for gaming. But that was one of the giant hang-ups I had whenever I played like a first-person shooter, that sort of thing, on my phone, dragging my thumbs across the screen. There was just too much resistance once you started playing, unless you, loaded it up with face grease or something like that.
And you didn't get the little springy add-ons that, who was that company that did them that you would attach to the screen?
No.
Remember those?
Yeah, I remember those.
Those things were actually cool. They actually worked pretty well.
Oh, yeah. Was that 10-1 Design that made those?
Yeah, I think so. They might still even make them. I don't know.
They probably do.
I mean, basically, they just gave you a physical thing that sat over the virtual control, and it had a capacitive little pad underneath it.
And did it allow you to slide it around on the screen?
Yeah. If you wanted to, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that would be much nicer because that's
the fling. They still make them.
The fling
joystick.
check that out.
It kind of suction cups to the edge. I guess you can't slide it around. But most of those games, most of those first-person shooters that have the, you know, virtual joystick control on the screen, it's usually set up so that wherever you touch the screen is where the joystick is, right?
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I see what you're talking about now.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are neat. I should get one of those.
I used to have a set of them somewhere.
Yeah, I have a set somewhere also, but...
They actually work pretty well. I mean, they do work pretty well. If you want a little physical, a tactile thing to stick your thumb on.
Yeah, you should send me one, Jeff.
Well, I can't find them. Oh. You know how when you move and then you just can't find stuff?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually, I had a pair of Shure SE-210 headphones that broke. The wires broke and frayed, and one of the earbuds actually fell off. And those are awesome headphones, and I wanted to get them repaired. And I knew that I had them around somewhere that I was just saving until I was ready to figure out a solution to that problem. And I just, you know, had to dig everywhere. I finally found them. $60, and Shure will give me a pair of SE-215s with the new button and everything. So I think I'm going to do that. Think I should do that?
I think it sounds like fun. Do it.
Yeah, I don't know. Headphones, they never stick together. They always break at some point.
Yeah.
Even the expensive ones, it's kind of a bummer. Okay. So we have to talk about this silly GoPro thing. We have to talk about Google Glass and ARM. But before we get into that, we have to talk about our sponsor this month, which is Lynda at lynda.com. Kickstart your new year and challenge yourself to learn something new with a free 10-day trial to lynda.com. It's used by millions of people around the world. They have over 3,000 courses on topics like web development, photography, visual design, and business, as well as software training like Excel, WordPress, Photoshop. All the courses are taught by experts, and new courses are added to the site every week. So whether you want to set new financial goals, find a work-life balance, invest in a new hobby, ask your boss for a raise, find a new job, or improve upon your current job skills, lynda.com has something for everyone. And I think it goes without saying that it's just one of the best sites out there. If you want to learn something, that's where you got to go. If it has to do with anything software based, really. If anybody ever comes to me, they say, I want to learn web development. I want to learn how to program. I'm not even going to think about other things. I'm just going to say, go to lynda.com. As I've said before, I used all of their, all the training that I gave to myself or that I acquired to build Appler was done through lynda.com. I hunkered down one summer, subscribe to lynda.com, and just went at it. And the coolest thing about lynda.com is that once you're on the subscription, you have access to the entire catalog of everything. So let's say you start getting into web development and you're like, well, maybe I want to check out Swift development and see what that's all about. You can just jump over to it and start watching those videos, no problem. There's no limit to what you can watch when you're subscribed to it. So there's a month-to-month program, $25 per month after the trial. You get a free 10-day trial, as I said. You use the code TIOSS, T-I-O-S-S, so lynda.com/TIOSS. There's the premium membership, which is $37.50 per month, and they give you a deal if you do annual memberships. But with the premium membership, you get project files to download so you can actually look at the end product as you're working along with the instructor on those, and they're just excellent, and I'm so happy to have them. They have things like Swift Essential Training, iOS 8 Essentials, setting up your mobile office to work from anywhere. That one looks pretty intriguing. Speeding up and maintaining your Mac, Code Clinics, HTML, JavaScript, PHP, MySQL, Objective-C, iOS, all that stuff. If it's software, I mean, actually they have, I should say, they have design courses too. So they have a lot of stuff. You can go there and check out the entire catalog that they have, and you can get sample videos without even doing anything. So if you want to feel it out, see what they have, even before you start the 10-day trial, you can do that too. So, but when you're ready to start, use lynda.com/TIOSS and you get 10 days free. So check them out. lynda.com.
Cool.
And with that, the only reason I bring up this GoPro thing is because I walk in the other day. I'm staying with my mom. And I walk in. She says, "Hey, I heard about the GoPro that Apple is making, and that shares of GoPro have just gone down because Apple's making a GoPro now." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? I hadn't looked at the internet because I'm kind of on vacation, but I thought surely I must have heard rumors about this leading up to it, or maybe some kind of an announcement." And of course, she rewinds the DVR, and it's just some kind of blip on CNN where they say Apple has been granted a patent, but it's being blown out of proportion. Basically, Apple has some patents that they acquired from Kodak in 2012. And I think most of it is regarding a remote camera system that can be controlled by a smartwatch or phone, which makes sense. That's pretty much there in the Apple Watch, right? We've seen demos of being able to trigger your iPhone camera from your Apple Watch. But I guess the other thing was that they, it's something involving moving quickly, wind resistance and weird digital distortions. But I just thought it was funny that people actually saw a patent application and thought, "Oh, Apple announced it."
People don't get what this stuff means. And so you get one person that says, "Well, Apple's doing this." And everyone else just stops on the bandwagon. And the next thing you know, you have your local news report saying, "Apple buys GoPro and starts making their own ocular replacement cameras. You only have to give up one eye."
Ooh, I'll do that. Can I do that?
Sure.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. Okay, so Tony Fadell, the iPod father, he's at Google, of course, because Google acquired Nest. He's, the last few years, he's been working on the thermostat and the smoke detector at Nest. So those are great products, obviously. Have you guys played with the smoke detectors, by the way?
I have two, and they have I had to send one back. There is a
recall?
No, I think there potentially should be. I don't know if I want to go that far and say that. I shouldn't say that. But there are lots of reports, and I suffered from this, of them, certain units, suddenly giving false alarms. And this happened to me, and it's freaking freaky because the thing talks, right? So you're laying there in bed 3 a.m. and you hear this voice come on like, "Warning, smoke detected in the hallway. The alarm will sound. The alarm will be loud."
Yeah, that's an awesome thing to wake up to.
And you're like, "What's going on?" And then it starts going off. And then if you have more than one, they start talking to each other, right?
They start gossiping about the smoke.
They're like, and you hear the other one, "Warning, there's smoke detected in the hallway," or wherever it is. It's kind of cool because you program in, like when you set it up, you tell it what location it's in. So it's in a bedroom, it's in the hallway, bedroom two, whatever. You can give it that information. But mine just started going off for no reason. So it started doing that, and it's like you wake up, and you're like, "Okay, what's going on?" And there's no smoke, there's no nothing. And it did it a couple times, and finally I got on support. And, you know, kudos to support. They were, like, awesome. They're like, "Here, try this, try that. You know, make sure there's no dust around it," all this stuff, which I had already kind of done because I had been doing some research online. And then ultimately they said, "Okay, just we're gonna replace it." But the problem is if it ends up being defective like that, you can't – there's no way to silence it. Like, once it starts going off, you can't. I mean, you can walk up to it and silence it. You can tap the button and silence it temporarily, but you can't just disable it.
Do you have a baseball bat?
Yeah, you can disable it, Adam.
What you have to do is you have to open it up. You have to get a screwdriver, open it up, take the batteries out. Well, you don't really want to do that, though. I mean, this is a thing designed to protect you, right?
Sure.
So, in essence, you're going to have people disabling them because they're doing these false alarms. So it's a really bad safety problem. And when I found out about it, I went on their forums, and there are lots of reports of people having this issue. And I guess they've been replacing them, but I just question, you know, is this other one going to go bad at some point? Is there a bigger flaw that they're not sort of copping to? I would be worried about it, but, you know, I guess hopefully they're on top of it. My new one's been great. I put the replacement one in, and they sent it out and then sent me a label and a box and everything to send the old one back. And I sent it back. So no issues so far with the new one, but it was just one of those things, like, it did it one time, and then it didn't do it for a couple months, and then all of a sudden it started doing it, like, every night. And it got really annoying.
Yeah. Well, you gotta hope that that's happening, because its tendency is to fail in the mode of, hey, there's smoke, instead of, there is smoke, but it doesn't tell you.
Yeah. They did do a firmware update, because I guess they were having a problem with steam early on. So if you had one installed near a bathroom and, you know, there was a hot shower, someone was shaving or something like that, steam was setting it off.
That's weird.
It can now tell the difference kind of between steam and smoke, supposedly.
Interesting.
All right, well, that's cool.
Well, and I guess because the way it works is it actually has like infrared sensors. It doesn't do, it's not like a sniffer. It's actually like looking at the air quality.
Okay.
Which is why dust can, if you have a lot of dust, or they say, I think there's been issues if you're doing like remodeling or construction in your house and you've got a lot of dust flying around, that can sometimes cause some issues with them, I guess.
Yeah.
Because it's actually looking at particle density in the air.
I did not know that. That's pretty cool.
Huh.
Among other things.
Yeah.
Anyway. I like mine. It's cool. I they're kind of expensive for a smoke detector, but.
Sure. But they're fun, and you can wave at them and they speak to you.
They got rid of the wave to silence feature.
Oh, they did?
That was recalled.
Bummer.
That came out to be defective. And that's the other frustration that I've had with it, is they were supposedly supposed to fix it and re-implement the feature, but I think it's never coming back.
Yikes.
Which to me, and that was like one of the key features.
Yeah, absolutely.
The whole wave to silence. So now you have to walk up to it physically, and there's a button on it, just like any other smoke detector, and you have to tap it if it's a false alarm. Yeah. And you can't, that was the other thing. That was the thing that I wanted to say. It's not that you can't silence it. They won't let you silence it from the app. And that's what's annoying.
That is annoying.
And they say that's for safety reasons.
Weird.
Hmm.
Because they wouldn't want somebody, like, if they were out and not at home and the smoke detector went off.
And they just say,
like,
whatever.
Silencing it. Yeah.
Whatever. Nobody cares. Nobody's home. It's fine. Okay. So anyway, we brought up Tony Fadell and Nest and all that is because, so he's at Google, and of course Google has Google Glass, and it has been reported by the Wall Street Journal that he is taking over the Google Glass team at Google.
Poor bastard. I feel sorry for that guy.
Yeah. Well, it's a big task.
No, I'm just... Do we really think Google Glass is going anywhere anytime soon?
No.
In its current incarnation, no, I don't think so. And I think that's probably why...
Even in a future incarnation, I don't think the world's ready for it. I mean, I get it. I get the kind of cool stuff. I think... I don't know. And maybe that's the reason why they should be doing it. You know, it's like the Newton being... you know, 10 years ahead of its time. It was awesome. Nobody wanted it or used it.
Yeah.
Maybe Google Glass is the same thing. Maybe, you know, Google Glass is awesome, but nobody wants it or uses it.
You know, I think
Google Glass is a great mix of technologies to try out, and not like for the public to try out, but for people to try out and see what works and what doesn't in a wearable tech that's giving you the heads up display sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's But I don't see this as a mainstream public product.
Yeah, I love it conceptually. I love everything about it conceptually. I don't think I'd ever put one on my face.
Well, in a way, I think that that sort of exposure, that constant exposure to information, is toxic to the human mind. And I think that's one of those things that we're even dealing with phones and computers and everything that we have
and
now,
watches.
Everything that is mainstream, of course, watches. Yeah. All of that stuff. I think that it's one of those things that culture is going to have to work out on their own and understand what is a good amount of exposure, what keeps you healthy and not feeling crazy and looking for that next thing that you're just constantly scrolling Facebook or whatever. All that stuff, I think, is kind of bad for mental health. So obviously Google Glass is not a good idea at this point. So I guess my rambling is leading to Google Glass may have a use down the road, as Jeff said, but not in the way that they have envisioned thus far. So not in a way where you're getting your tweets in your eyeball and all that social stuff. Of course, that Google really wants to pump into your eyeball.
Oh, but no, that is because it's inevitable and unavoidable because sci-fi says that's what we want.
Yeah, because sci-fi.
It's true. I mean, I'm not saying that even jokingly or flippantly. I mean, that it's a classic chicken and egg thing that I always wonder about. Is, you know, it's like, does science determine sci-fi, or does sci-fi determine, you know, technology and science? And I think there's a little of both going on.
Yeah. Well, I think what I'm saying is it'll come out where there is utility for it. And I think there are things like it now that exist where in certain industries it makes sense.
Yeah, there's definitely
like
verticals
that
for it, for sure.
Yeah. But at this point, at least, humanity just isn't ready for it. There's
the public's
no
not ready
use
for it. But you're right. I mean, they can take that as a product and develop it in certain vertical markets and things like that and make it viable in a lot of different ways. So you could take that underlying technology and, you know, I don't know, you start incorporating it into safety gear for workers in you know, high-risk jobs or something like that, you know, where you've got to wear
a visor makes sense.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or safety goggles.
Yep.
You know, and you can bring up information. There's problems with the equipment or the lines or, yeah. I mean, a lot of that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Astronauts, spacesuits, that sort of thing. I think they may even
have. Those guys already have all that stuff, don't they?
I don't think they have HUD. I don't think they have HUD in those spacesuits.
Oh, that's
too
bad.
They definitely do for fighter pilots.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So that's a perfect example of that kind of thing. So.
Well, and it's interesting too, because somebody's doing a helmet, right? Have you seen the motorcycle helmet?
No.
With the HUD? It looks amazing.
But that does sound cool.
There's ski goggles that have HUD built in.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But not for your tweets.
No, it's for your downhill speed and where the double diamond route and triple diamond routes are.
Yeah, for stuff that makes sense.
Yeah.
Not for tweets.
Yeah.
Because we already have enough tweets. Arm in Max. This is an interesting thing that's been going on, and I
not going to happen.
It's never going to happen.
No, I don't. At least not for a while.
I've been talking about it.
Not for a while. I would say never say never. I don't think it's happening now.
Yeah. Well, it would be foolish for me to do the never ever line because we have Intel processors right now.
Right.
Right, and you probably said never ever at that point before.
No, I didn't, but...
Apple did.
But Apple did.
Yep. Yeah, so the reason we're bringing it up here, of course, is because ARM dominates the CPUs in all of our iOS devices. And actually, before I even read all these fresh rumors of ARM in Macs, I have been having multiple conversations about this exact thing, whereas maybe a year or two ago, I I definitely did not think that was going to happen. I didn't think we were going to see Arm and Max because it's just too basic. But as we're seeing with the A line of processors in iOS devices, Apple is doing some really incredible things with those CPUs. You can do a lot of very powerful things on iOS devices today. And it doesn't come at huge power expenses or heat expenses. And Apple is able to customize these chips in ways that make sense for them to add the instruction sets that really do what they want to do specifically in their operating system. So having that sort of integration top to bottom, I think would be very beneficial for them, and it makes sense that they're experimenting with it. So, of course, you have the issue of, well, they're currently running on x86 instruction sets.
Yeah.
They're basically going back from Intel to PowerPC in a sense, because they're currently running the CISC-style processors now, whereas they were doing RISC, and ARM, of course, is a RISC architecture. But you know, a lot of people talk about, well, they'd lose compatibility, you'd have to rewrite apps, this and that. Well, of course, we saw with...
Been through that transition.
Yeah, we've been through that transition. Mm-hmm. They had Rosetta. They can unearth Rosetta again and go the opposite direction and see those apps running as they did before. The only issue, I think, would be the interoperability with Windows stuff.
Yeah. I think for sure, they're past the stigma of RISC, or not RISC, ARM, rather. You know, I think there's a lot of people out there that say, no, this is never going to happen because, well, ARM's a mobile processor and it's designed for mobile devices and it's not going to be viable on the desktop. But that's really what's changed. You know, Apple's got the designers in-house now from that company they acquired a few years back. And, you know, it's really about building custom silicon for an application, in this case, a desktop computer or a laptop computer, that fits Apple's specifications. And what the underlying technology happens to be is, you know, based on or built on top of that ARM RISC architecture. But, you know, it's going to be a custom chip. It's, you know, I think there's a lot of people that immediately dismiss it because, well, those are mobile chips. Well, no, it's not. That's not really the case.
Right. They're not going to build them as mobile chips. They're just building on that architecture where they have been able to hack at it and customize it as much as they feel they need to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool.
I dropped you the link for that motorcycle helmet in case people are running. It's called the Scully.
Okay.
From Scully Systems. And it's got like cool stuff like GPS and a rear view camera as well. So there's like a rear view camera built into the helmet, and then that pops up on the HUD display. So it's like cool stuff like that.
Oh, that looks cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll definitely put that in the show notes here. So there have been rumors recently. I think it was from Ming-Chi Kuo who brought this up. I think maybe the same day or the day after, an Intel CEO was on CNBC and was asked about these rumors, and he was just incredibly like dismissive entirely of the idea. He He wasn't dismissive. He just seemed very confident. But he did, of course, address the fact that they need to continue progressing with their current designs. And of course they're at like, what is it, 14 nanometers or something like that?
I think that's where we're getting to.
It's something crazy like that. And I remember with them, Steve Jobs talking about the G5 and them going down to a 65 nanometer process and how that was such a big deal for them. And now they're at 14.
And at the time it was.
Yeah. But I mean, they've obviously worked past that. And now they're getting these
I think TSMC is at 16 and Samsung's targeting 14.
Yeah. It's impressive. But at the same time, if you consider the advantages of a RISC architecture, you don't have to pack as many transistors in to get as much work done. So there are benefits.
So potentially
all
more efficient.
Yes. Yes, definitely. So we'll see. I think it definitely has a potential in the Mac. It just depends on, I think it all depends on what Intel has for Apple, right? Because that was the reason they switched from PowerPC, is because Intel had a better product.
Yeah, that would, I mean, if anybody should be sensitive to that happening, it should be Intel, right? Because they were the company that Apple went to when they left IBM.
Yeah, yeah.
So they should fully understand that Apple's not above and beyond switching teams at any time if they think that's the right move for their technology.
Yeah.
And, you know, Intel, if they want to keep that business, they're going to have to step up their game and show Apple something. And that was the only reason, and that was the only reason IBM really lost that business, right? Is IBM did not want to step up and play ball and work with Apple.
Well,
so they
IBM,
lost the business.
Yeah, IBM, Motorola, and Apple all had completely different goals for the RISC processors.
Yep.
And they couldn't reconcile, and hey, now we have Intel Macs.
Yep. Now, what do you think? Do you think there would be some great benefits to having the entire product line streamlined on an ARM architecture? Do you think we'd see some benefits on our iOS devices if the Macs were running that? I mean, they're pretty interoperable, and we're continuing to see those sort of things with handoff. Do you think?
Well, if Apple found new interesting ways to improve performance and battery life, you know, they figure out a way to push that back to the iPhone and iPad.
Sure. And it may end up being things that benefit developers and maybe make certain tricky things easier to implement, and then we would see neater things happen on our iOS devices and all across the board.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. And speaking of which, Apple Swift programming language is currently so it's being the programming languages that are out there, I think it's maybe the top 100 or so, is ranked by a place called RedMonk, and they look at places like Stack Overflow and GitHub, and they try to quantify the popularity of various programming languages. And so what they have seen is Swift move from Q3 2014, they were in the 68th slot, and they've moved up to the 22nd slot in Q1 2015, which is a jump of 46 slots in their ranking. And they're thinking that they're going to see Swift in the top 20 languages this year.
That's kind of crazy.
That's really impressive. And I haven't really looked at Swift at all. I played around very little.
The language is beta. That's the impressive part about it, is nobody, you probably don't really want to ship anything in it yet. Right?
Yeah.
It hasn't been finished. It's an unfinished language, right?
Right. Now, what is it? It was solidified for one of the two platforms, right? It was either iOS or Mac. Is that correct?
See, yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I may have missed that.
I think they locked down the APIs for one of the two. I don't think it's both, but yeah, that's one of the things. But the fact that it's popular in these, based on GitHub and Stack Overflow,
yeah,
that makes a lot of sense, because people are experimenting with it. They're trying to figure it out. And that's great, because if it is as good as Apple made it out to be, that means that you can get more developers who have cool ideas that, you know, can use a language that is more accessible to them. And
yeah.
Maybe that's a good idea.
Well, there's hesitation in there, because yes, anytime a language gets more accessible, it's great to have more people sort of building for it. But it comes at the same it, you know, it comes with the bad side of that too.
Yeah.
So there's the big upside. There's also the big downside where you get a lot more people able with less skills to potentially throw something together that's just garbage. And I feel like we already have so much garbage on, especially the App Store on the iOS side.
Yeah, but I think
sort of like brings more people to the party more easily.
Well, in some ways you can say that you may get more garbage for different reasons, but at the same time I think you'll also get more quality stuff different reasons, because the people who have an affinity for detail in design and the way an application should work, it'll be more accessible for those people.
Right. But there's a certain filter that stuff being hard to build creates, right?
Sure. I mean, it's not going to be...
That's like, why we don't have that many people building, you know, hand-built automobiles.
Sure.
Right? But the ones that do get built are freaking amazing.
Yeah.
They're the best in the world. Right? So there's the same sort of thing. You know, you commoditize it too much and make it too much plug and play and too much drop in code and stuff like that, and you lose some of that quality.
Sure, I'm optimistic though.
I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
But it is going to bring on more stuff that we have to sift and filter through.
Yeah, more sifting, but more stuff that's cool. I'm on board. Word Lens has been added to Google Translate. So they have the Google Translate app, and they, of course, acquired Word Lens, the magical app that allows you to hold your iPhone up to something in another language and have it translate it right in place. So it's finally...
It's a babblefish for your iPhone.
Yeah. And now you just hold it up in Google Translate. So, and I believe it's all free now. So as it was previously in... Oh, crap. My headphones just crapped out. Uh-oh.
Oh, now we can say anything and Michael won't know. This will be the best.
Huh, that was weird. I think it's still picking up stuff. But yeah, as it was before, with Word Lens, you had to pay for all those languages. Now it's all free, built into Google Translate. Boom, right there. Awesome.
You know, I have all those Google apps on my phone, and the only one that I use is Authenticator.
Yeah.
On any regular basis.
I don't have many Google apps on my phone. I think I have maybe Translate. Let's see. What
I have a whole folder for them.
I have Google and Translate, and that's it.
I go through this cycle where I install the Google apps and then delete them because I'm not using them. Then later on, it's like, oh, I really need to have those. So I install them. They sit there for several weeks, a few months, and then I delete them again.
Yeah, you don't
without need, really using them.
You don't need them. That's the thing.
Yeah, well, the thing is, if I would just remember that, I wouldn't keep reinstalling them.
Yeah, I do two-factor on a lot of stuff, so I do keep the Authenticator app installed on my iPhone because I think I have two-factor forget, and more sites are using Google Authenticator for their two-factor, which I actually really like. I like having that all in one app.
Yeah, that is cool.
So...
Yeah, I just use 1Password.
You don't use two-factor authentication?
No.
No. If a site offers it, I opt into it immediately now.
I'm just behind the times all the time with password stuff.
You're retro.
I'm retro because I use 1Password.
Nice.
I'm loving the 1Password extension. On iOS, by the way, can I just mention that?
Oh,
that's
the
like
only. The only bummer is I wish there was some way that it could work in the web view within an app, because I don't think it works there.
No, I think they have to add that, and there are not that many apps that have added it. The only thing, and this is kind of inside baseball, but I think you guys are using the betas.
Mm-hmm.
Have they not put out, because I know they were switching to the new Apple system. I don't think they, have they pushed out a new beta?
I'm not on the betas.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Jeff?
Oh, that's a good question. I just updated my beta yesterday.
Okay. We'll have to talk later. It's not working for me.
Oh, well, then that's a problem.
Yeah, not a big deal. I have the mainstream one too, so I'm good. What were we talking about? Wordlands. That's it. That's all we have to talk about. And
there's not a lot going on right now.
Not a lot going on. It's cold
crickets
here.
Crickets until we get the watch, I think.
Yeah, that watch is going to be sweet.
I hope so, because I'm going to drop some serious money on it. And I don't wear watches.
I know. I'm worried I'm going to cave and buy the stainless one.
Oh, yeah, me too. That's the that one looks so sweet.
I want the stainless with a black like leather band.
Yeah. Yeah, and that has the sapphire, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's going to be like $500 or $600, and I just can't even. $500, $600 for a watch. It's just
credit cards.
Can I borrow your credit card, Michael?
Sure. Well, what's even worse is I'm sure they'll let you pay on Apple Pay.
Of course they will.
And then
one touch of the thumb.
The problem with Apple Pay is people don't think about it, which is what I don't know if you saw the piece that was posted by the guys at the guys who make the Glyph. So they did a post about how they've been, you know, how they're making money, and they have their own app that's called like Fast Slow Fast or Slow Fast Slow. Can't remember. It's for like controlling slow motion within a clip, so you can shoot at the high frame rate and then you can adjust up and down within the app. And they were selling it at $1.99, and then they had the epiphany of, hey, let's make it free, but put in there Apple Pay purchasing of the Glyph, you know, and of our other products. And so now you get the free app, but then you're like, oh, I'd like a little tripod to go with this. So tap Glyph.
Nice.
And you don't have to do anything but press Apple Pay because it gets your address and the payment all in one press.
And then
one
it just
press,
shows
right?
up.
And then it just shows up.
And you don't even remember it.
Exactly. You don't even think, oh, I bought this thing.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. And scary at the same time.
Yeah. Scary good. So.
Picks.
I don't know. I don't have a pick. I was thinking about skipping him because I have to go out and meet someone. Last
right,
person
we'll,
I have to
we'll
see
get picks next week
before
yeah,
I
sure.
Head back home. So, and I'm old and it's like
old
45 here. So,
yeah, go.
Yeah, it's late, by the way. So I got one of these icicles, for what it's worth, for those people who care about the audio setup. And that's how I'm working it this week, is with one of these blue icicles. So. You be the judge of how good that thing is. So with that, of course, lynda.com/TIOSS, you get free 10-day trial. Check out all their stuff there. lynda.com. They're awesome. iPhone picks and show notes are at theiosshow.com when we have picks. We always have show notes though. Of course, review the show in iTunes. And tell a friend. We appreciate that. Someone who would enjoy the show, let them know. Feedback at theiosshow.com is where you can contact us. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. And Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, at Jay Gamet on Twitter. And TMO Daily Observations is the podcast he does every day, every weekday.
Every weekday. It's always just so much fun to do this show.
It is fun. So, I'm glad you guys were able to make it happen this week because travel plans are crazy. I'm headed back tomorrow.
Well, travel safe.
Thank you. And Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, MacCast.com, at MacCast on Twitter, and member.maccast.com is where you can find the member version of that show.
Yep. And then I got to bring up something that my friend Andreas, who he has this cool thing. He makes, well, he actually makes totems. I don't know if you know this. You know Totem from Monument Valley? No, Monument Valley.
Oh, those, okay.
Yeah, over on Etsy. I think he sells them on Etsy. They may sell them actually through the company at Monument Valley. Anyway, he does that. He makes skateboards, does all this cool stuff, but he's an artist. He lives in New York. We're trying to do this thing on Twitter, and I want to get it trending, so I'm going to throw it out there. So if you like to draw or doodle or sketch or what have you, we're calling it Doodle Off, so it's #DoodleOff. So draw a little doodle, a sketch, and like tweet it out with a hashtag doodle off, and like share it out there. And I actually tweeted at Jeff, but I haven't seen his yet. So
doodle Jeff.
I just haven't had a chance to do it, but
yeah, I know,
but
he's been traveling. It's fine.
Yeah. By the way, the totem looks awesome. I just went dead.
Yep, I totally should plug his URL, but I can't remember it right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's the URL?
I don't know. I just did a Google search for Etsy Monument Valley Totem, and it brought this thing
up.
Yeah,
they're not cheap because they're handmade. He makes each one. So
I love how he's cradling it in the photo. That's awesome.
They're awesome. The head moves and the whole deal.
Cool. I like that. That's neat. Yeah, if this was a video podcast, I would move my mouth in a fun way and then insert the URL later on.
Yeah, so just search for like handmade totem on Etsy and you'll find it. buyandreas.com/thetotem.
Buyandreas.com. Cool.
Yeah, and this is not Andreas in the photo. He must have got a model.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. buyandreas.com/the-totem.
Nice. Plugs. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, at GetAppler on Twitter. GetAppler.com is where you can find Appler. It's super fun. Check it out. And with that, we'll see you next week on the iOS show.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this? A stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do?
Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.